Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning, Lucy.
Welcome back to the Cancer Survivor Show, brought to you by
the Chemo Girls.
Well, we are right in the middle of Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Yes, we are.
October. And I walked in your door today, Sharon, and your little girl, baby, has pink in her hair.
She does. She has a pink stripe down one side. And actually, Sophie has one, too.
And for a person that's never really gotten into the pink thing, tell me about that. How did that happen?
Well, you know, we use a southern term, we were at the hairdresser yesterday. And the lady just started braiding the girl's hair after my haircut and pulled out these hair chalks, is what she called them, and asked them if they wanted stripes in their hair. And of course, they were both like, pink. They love pink. But I thought after the fact, well, hey, you know, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
That works
really well.
That's right. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah. But I'm not normally, you're right, I'm not the big pink girl.
Well, you know what? You know, we're going to do a series a little bit later on what all that pink thing's all about.
Yes, exactly.
In the pink really doesn't necessarily mean breast cancer. It means being in wellness and being wholeness.
Sure.
But that's another subject.
Yeah.
Today,
we have the
ultimate privilege to be with Miss Molly McDonald on the line. Good morning, Molly.
Good morning, ladies.
Oh, my goodness. We met Molly when we were in Nashville at the National Women's Survivors Conference, and we just fell in love with her and said, Molly, you have to come on our show and tell everybody a little bit about your cancer story and what you're doing to pay it forward after that remarkable story, your life.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
I can't wait for our listeners to hear a little bit from you, but I'm just going to tell them just a little bit about you before we get going, and then we'll let you take the mic
And
tell everybody what you're doing. But Molly McDonald is a phenomenal woman, a mother of five children that was forced to re-enter the job market in 2001 after a devastating divorce, and then later was faced with the diagnosis of breast cancer in 2005 that led her to fill a niche in a nonprofit world. Her background in journalism, which she worked for the Detroit Free Press, led her into a wide variety of professional jobs, and she developed a niche for a branding identity for her new mission. In the spring of 2005, at a time of job transition, Molly's annual mammogram came back looking suspicious, and a biopsy confirmed that she had an early stage of breast cancer. This diagnosis deterred her career plans, took her off that ramp, and she and her new husband together underwent 6 months of treatment. Well, the financial fallout for her family led her to want to do things for other people. She faced some very big obstacles, juggling utility costs, car insurance, Cobra payments, just so that she
astronomical
could
astronomical Cobra payments.
Her Oof. Treatments, $1,200 a month, she had to come up with just to, so her treatments could continue. So after treatment, as her family's recovering financially, there was little left to even buy groceries for her family, and she found herself standing in food bank lines. Well, I don't think that's the end of the story. She looked at this situation and thought to herself, how can I help? How can I give back? How can I give help? Such, she started the Pink Fund. And I'm going to let her tell a little bit more about that herself. Molly, welcome.
Welcome, Miss Molly.
Thank you. Well, ladies and listeners, I'm a baby boomer. And I'm kind of in the middle of the boom, and I was raised to get an education and have a career for a brief time, but get married and expect to be supported by a husband. I really was in that phase of life, came of age in the late 60s, and never planned on having to support myself. So I really gave up my career to get married and have children. And in the fall of 1997, drove up the driveway to our beautiful home. I lived a life for many years that most Americans only imagine having and think they will have if they win the lottery. We lived at the top 1.5% of the country. I had a 6,000 square foot home with 4 luxury cars in the garages and pool and a pool house and every physical thing, worldly thing that anybody could want. And when I drove up the driveway in August of 1997 with 5 of my children, 4 to 13, strapped in the back of my gas-guzzling Suburban, I saw a small note on the door. And when I pulled the note off, walked through the house, pulled the note off, it read that our home in small fine print was going to be auctioned off in 30 days. Oh, and I learned that evening that my name had been forged on hundreds of thousands of dollars of financial instruments and that we were broke. So I took everything that I thought had value, my wow. couture wardrobe, my jewelry, my Steinway concert grand, and I sold everything I could for cash. I liquidated my small life insurance policy. I liquidated my IRAs because I had to have cash in order to move us into a rented home and transition my children from private to public school. And then, of course, be able to pay bills. So I reentered the workforce full-time in 2001. But prior to that, I would take whatever job I could get doing freelance writing. I couldn't afford daycare, like many American women can't anyway. I sold Mary Kay. Mm. I just would scramble to do whatever I could. And there were literally moments when I would have $2.50 in my wallet, and I had to make decisions between do I buy a gallon of gas or a gallon of milk. So in the spring of 2005, I was about to get a six-figure job in the large and grand format graphics industry. I decided to move out of a kind of a desk job in marketing into sales because I felt that I would have flexibility in sales. If a kid got sick, I could run home. And I also had unlimited income earning potential. Well, I was transitioning between jobs in 2005, moving from one company to another, and made a not-so-brilliant decision to have my teeth cleaned and my mammogram in the interim weeks between the two jobs. And with no family history or never a callback on a mammogram, my phone rang, and I was informed that there were some suspicious-looking spots on the mammogram, and they would like me to come back in for a second look. And on Friday, April 1st, 2005, I'm in New York City pitching a job to Major League Baseball, feeling very confident that we're going to get this large book of business. Mm-hmm. And I jump in the cab to go back to LaGuardia to fly home to Detroit, and my cell phone rings. And it's my OBGYN who delivered all 5 of my children, delivering for what is a death notice for 40,000 women a year in this country. I had breast cancer. Mm. And while my early stage cancer was not going to take my life, it took my livelihood while I underwent treatment. And the first financial domino began to fall. So I had to make some decisions about what do I pay? And I had a $1,200 a month COBRA payment, and I had very little savings. In fact, a 2012 credit study reports that 51% of Americans say that they have less than $1,000 cash on hand.
Yeah.
And based on what's happened in this country and the fact that the average household family income is about $37,000, you can imagine that even having $1,000 cash on hand will be challenging for most families.
Yeah.
So basically, I had remarried a man who was self-employed and his business had taken a huge hit. And my income represented about 70% of what we need to survive on. And even in recent years, we know that we have a workforce in this country of 47% females. 76% of us work full-time, and 26% of us are head of households, which means that we don't have a partner or spouse to fall back on should we have any kind of interruption in our work life. And in our case, the interruption was breast cancer. So we had to make a decision. Do we make that COBRA payment to ensure access to care and ensure the children and my husband, or do we make the house payment, or do we make the COBRA payment, or do we make the car payment, or do we make the COBRA payment, or do we make the utility bills? And we chose to make the COBRA payment, the car payment, and the utility bills, and we did not make the house payment.
Mm-hmm.
And within 4 months, I don't know what I was thinking, frankly. The house, you know, the foreclosure notices start stuffing my mailbox, and I'm thinking, we're going to be homeless.
Good gravy.
And, yeah, it was pretty crazy. I thought we're going to be homeless. I have a University of Michigan degree, and I'm not dumb. And it's just a minor breast cancer interruption, but we're going to be homeless. And that really terrified me because I thought, and I knew, frankly, that once people become homeless in this country, it starts a cycle of poverty living and poverty thinking and creates a chasm between getting state and federal aid and then making enough money to be able to afford what you're getting essentially for free. Well,
right.
Not free because we taxpayers pay for it. But so people stay poor.
Yeah.
Often up to three generations. And that frightened me. I thought, oh my gosh, you know, my children's father had a Harvard education. We both came from well-off families. How could this happen? Well, and when I was sitting in the waiting rooms that summer, you know, waiting for treatment, I met a lot of other working women who were terrified. They were women like myself whose families depended upon their income. They'd taken a family medical leave. They were really sick from treatment. They had side effects that, for them, made it physically and mentally impossible to work. And they were concerned, would they have enough time from their medical leave? What would happen if their benefits ran out? Some of them, their husbands were working or losing jobs or facing early retirement. They just had different scenarios. And I began to think, when there was no resource available to me, when I went, you know, to the social worker and my physician and everybody else and asked, well, could somebody help me make a COBRA payment or a house payment? There was just nothing available. And so my quest to get help became one to give help.
Yeah, I think that that's amazing. And I think that that's the only way to make any sense out of it all, personally.
That's exactly what I thought. I thought my trying to give help is not going to save our family. So it's not going to make, I'm not going to raise money to make my house payment or my car payment or my COBRA payment. I'm going to be paying this forward to somebody else. And it, even I in my mind, I thought if I only am able to help just one other woman from this nightmare that I was experiencing and her family, then this would make sense of mine. And that was sort of my short-term thinking. My longer-term thinking was, I can't be the only woman, working woman in America for whom a breast cancer diagnosis upsets their career plans and results in a lost paycheck. So how could I start an organization that would help women nationally and pay some of those bills directly to their creditors?
Right. Well, Molly, I just applaud you. That is such a huge swing. And I think that very few people expect that anyone that is as seemingly financially sound as you were in the beginning could ever end up in that food line and facing homelessness and that kind of thing. But the truth is, we're really all just a day away from financial difficulty, depending on how the dominoes fall. And so, you know, I know not all of us can or will depend on the government. I believe that community has a strong responsibility for our brothers and our sisters, and you have stepped up in that way, I mean, just in a huge way, and I thank you. I mean, I was lucky. I was just a school teacher, but I had fantastic insurance, and even though I was young, I had, like, the disability policy and the cancer policy, and maybe I was paranoid, I don't know, but it worked. But I have seen myself the devastation that can come with a diagnosis like this. And the stars really align for you in a bad way. But I think, you know, I don't know how people feel about the higher power thing, but I think somebody knew who this was going to happen to, and that you were a pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of person, and that you were going to do something better for people that are coming up behind you.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that I remember telling God when I lived in my big house with all my beautiful clothes and wardrobe and everything else that I wanted to do his work, but I didn't want to, I wanted to keep my stuff. And I think God knew that my stuff was really like a ball and chain. I mean, people think that having wealth and a lot of money and everything else is a great thing, but there's a lot that goes along with having all that stuff in terms of caring for it and sharing for it, and it really does hold you. So in losing everything I thought had value, I really found
your
what
value.
Did have value. Mm-hmm.
That's right. I think that's why we connected you in Nashville, yeah. with you in Nashville so much, is because that is our missions are different, but our missions are the same. It's paying it forward. It's helping that next person. We just do it in our own ways, and I just think it's wonderful. So, Molly, will you tell us a little bit about the Pink Fund?
Please.
Yeah.
Well, the Pink Fund is a national organization serving women locally down to the county level. Our national partners, Ford Motor Company, Warriors, and Pink, where you can go online and purchase any of their products and select the Pink Fund at checkout to receive 100% of the net proceeds. Those monies go to anybody first come, first serve who meets our qualifications nationally. And then money raised by state or by county will be allocated to that state or county and restricted if so desired by the donor or the third-party fundraiser. So we like to say money raised here stays here, wherever here is. Every month, our organization receives 80 to 100 applications. We have a grants processor that goes through them with a team of volunteers from local community colleges or universities who are studying social work or hospital administration. And they help to go through the application, ensure that all the supporting documentation is in place. And then at the end of the month, it goes to a committee where a third set of eyes goes over it and determines, based on the budget set by our treasurer, how much money we can pay out in bills on behalf of those women. And once we accept a patient, we will pay the bills we agree to pay for 90 days. So mm-hmm. we project out financially what we can cover for 90 days. And that is by design to align with the Family Medical Leave Act.
That is phenomenal. I know some other movements that are similar to yours, more in a concentrated one city sort of approach. And I think it's set up to do just, pay an electric bill here or there and that sort of thing. But you guys have really got it aligned to take them over a huge hump, not just today's cure, but let's get through this process and let's get on the other side so we can reestablish life.
Not really putting out little fires, but, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, that's what I would say. And, there are so many good-hearted people out there that
yes.
want to help. And I've just talked to somebody this last week, and she said, well, I just want to grant some wishes. I'd like to send somebody $100 or $300. And I said, there are two things that trouble me about that. One is giving money to an individual from a nonprofit versus paying a direct bill. You really can't show impact if you don't know where the money's going.
Right.
And the other one is that $100 is not going to solve a problem. It will put a Band-Aid on it, possibly. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do, actually, is partner with some of those smaller regional organizations to tell them, look, you maintain your organization in your community. You fundraise. You pay your expenses. But if you so align or agree with what we do, allow us to run the program. And we can then make the bill payments on behalf of people in any town USA.
Uh-huh.
So we're looking at that as a business model because actually it's more efficient. They wouldn't have to hire a grants processor. They wouldn't have to go through all the things that we do and all the reporting. They could become a grant-making organization back to the Pink Fund.
Uh-huh.
And we think that there's so much overlap in the breast cancer world. But on the other hand, reality is that patients have to cobble together resources. So certainly if they don't qualify according to our guidelines or if we don't, our cap on the giving is $3,000 a patient based on available funding, which is significant. Many organizations, it's maybe $500, uh-huh. $300, $100.
Okay.
But $3,000, we may not have it.
Right.
So the reality is they'll have to cobble together additional resources. So then, of course, we refer to whatever we're aware of, and we'd love for you all to tell us about the organizations that you're aware of so that we can put them on our website as a resource.
Okay.
That's great. We'll do that, definitely. That sounds fantastic. I tell you, have you thought at all about what life would have been like for you if this had been available?
You mean if it had been available for me?
Yeah.
Well, then I wouldn't have founded the Pink Fund, probably.
That's true. So
I don't know. I would probably be working at a marketing job somewhere. Probably would not be working as hard as I'm working. And I don't think my life would be as rich as it is now,
yeah,
because of the people that I've met, the stories that I've heard, the lives that the Pink Fund has been able to impact, and the team we've put together to help meet this need. So, you know, I would have been working a job just so I can make my mortgage like most Americans.
Yeah.
And I also don't know if I would have uncovered the richness of really getting in the down and dirty of people's lives and giving back. And when I was a young woman, I was a member of the Junior League, which is a wonderful organization, and I did a few fundraisers for a homeless shelter and other small organizations, and I would attend charity events. But I never, ever thought that I would be involved in the nonprofit world, and certainly not in a really significant way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my life is richer for it. And better than that, my children have a role model now,
mm-hmm,
of a parent who says, you know, hey, this is a crummy situation, but let's see what we can do with it.
You are the right girl, Miss Molly. You are the right girl for this.
You know, we're meeting with a lady this afternoon to present her a pack, one of our backpacks. And I spoke with her yesterday. She's a mutual friend in my little small community. And she reached out and she says, I really want one of your backpacks. I'm starting chemo next week. And I just know that I am supposed to start doing something when this is all over. I says, well, how you doing, Sherry? She says, well, I'm still a little numb. She says, I'm still trying to figure this all out. But she says, I've come to the place where I know that God is allowing me to go through this because I'm supposed to do something on the other side. So it's changing her life already. And, I think we're all together in this, that we're taking those lemons and making lemonade. And it's going to be sweet lemonade, too,
mm-hmm,
for others. And it blesses our lives more than I think we bless others.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Well, tell our viewers where they can find out more information about you and the Pink Fund.
Well, it's pretty simple, thepinkfund.org.
Okay.
Our website is going to be renovated shortly and improved upon. But also, they can go to our Facebook page and fan us, where we kind of post more day-to-day immediate information. And we are always looking, number one, for people who want to help us fundraise in their communities. And number two, we want people to be aware that we are out there, and that the application is readily available on the website under Get Help. A potential applicant will have to answer 8 pre-qualifying questions in order to access the application. And that's by design, because when we went national, we had a huge increase in applications from 10 to 15 a month to, you know, 85, 90 a month. And we just didn't want to be spending all day long denying people, sending letters after they went to all that time, like, we're sorry you don't meet our guidelines. Here are some other resources. So that's designed to really narrow down the focus and determine whether they meet our initial guidelines for help.
Okay, good. Well, we'll certainly add you to our Facebook page, too, which is My Chemo Cocktail and Me, with the and sign. And we're just partnering together to help women, help people and families.
Miss,
yes, well, you have a great product.
Thank you.
Thank you. Miss Molly, we close our show out with something we call the not just surviving, but thriving tidbit of the day. And that is when you put down the business of life and look around you and just take in a blessing that you would have otherwise missed. And so I wanted to ask if you might have a tidbit to share with us today from your life.
Well, this is probably a little bit longer than a tidbit, but the night before my surgery, my husband and I cast up my bust and put a plaster cast together and painted it with battle ribbons across it, because I wanted a memory of the whole woman, the physically whole woman I once was, not realizing that the woman who had lost so much of things she thought held value and lost a portion of a body part would be of much greater value because of the adversity she faced.
Excellent.
That is an excellent tidbit.
I love it. I think I've actually seen on your website that bust. And that's amazing. I was wondering what the story was, and now I know. Thank you for sharing that. So, well, guys, I think this is a wrap, but I really encourage you guys to go and look up the Pink Fund and Miss Molly and all that they're doing, and let's start fundraising in some other communities and let this mission of hers spread.
That's right.
That would be fantastic. So, this is going to be bye for now, but as usual, Lucy and I are not just surviving, but
thriving with you.
Bye, guys.
Have a wonderful
Bye-bye.
Day. Bye-bye.